Welcome to a series of conversations based on the book How to Lead When You Don't Know Where You're Going by Susan Beaumont. My name is Major Bryce Davies and I'm part of the Salvos Faith Communities Development Team. If you would like to explore the topics covered in this series, please contact us at faithcommunities@salvationarmy.org.au as we're happy to discuss these topics with you and to facilitate opportunities for you to have further conversations with your people. Today my guest is Commissioner Miriam Lewis and we're going to be having a look at the third chapter of the book, which is called Tending the Soul of the Institution. Soul tending makes the assumption that an organization has a soul, a divine spark that represents the true essence of its identity. Often this is linked to the origins of the movement. So, for example, the Salvation Army left the Methodists because they're a bit too hoity-toity and we had a ragtag bunch of sinners. So the soul of the Salvation Army and its origins. Talk to me about the beginnings of the Salvation Army and your understanding about how that beginning has shaped us into who we are.
Yeah, look, I would say that the beginnings of the Salvation Army were the most exciting thing that I can think of, and I'd have to attribute that to it was a God idea. Booth captured that idea and he went for it, and I think that's very exciting. So he said, you know, we're for the people who have no church to go. We're going to do whatever it takes and let's see where God leads us. And it was in an incredible movement where people were served, but they were also saved. And great stories came out of that, whether they were social justice stories or whether they were match factory stories or whether it was a little statement that said others. And actually every Salvation Army officer around the world, let's be about that. And he really meant it. And he gained this gathering and these partnerships that were quite amazing. And let's not forget Catherine, because she was every bit as influential. And together they just believed that they were going to win the world for Jesus, whatever that took. And so very exciting beginnings. And I think that that shaped us for the years to come.
Mm. It was pretty much a breakaway, though, from the Methodist Church, wasn't it? It's like there was something about the Methodist Church or the institution or the culture of the Methodist Church that just wasn't compatible with the Salvos or with what Booth was all about. Mm. Talk to me about how you perceive that, and is that still relevant to us today?
The Methodists were a great group of people. They got so organised and they worked out how to really get people saved and also how to disciple them. And it's probably the danger of any organisation. They started to go a little bit more middle class, so this rise and lift. And I think that Booth realised that, you know what, we're going to be a church for everyone, so they don't fit in regular church, let's start our own. He never really meant it to be a church, but it took on both sides, the serving of the people and the saving of their souls, so it had to go somewhere, and so it landed on a bit of both. So the Methodists were good, but he saw that this rise and lift came into being, and then he decided we need a Salvation Army. Started off as a volunteer army, but then it was also all about salvation.
Mm. And we got involved in the local community issues, didn't we? There was this match factory that you've mentioned. The Maiden Tribute is another classic story of Salvation Army beginnings where a couple of Salvo officers took a big risk. I think they employed a 13-year-old girl to demonstrate to the authorities that you could actually buy a 13-year-old girl from the country as a prostitute. And they got into all sorts of trouble, but they ended up raising the age of consent to 16 or something. It was powerful, wasn't it?
And incredible the people they partnered with. Like along the way, they had high-level, top-notch people from society saying, you know, we'll lend a hand because this mission is worthwhile. And I was even interested just recently to hear in the Prison Gate Ministry in Australia, they had prime ministers coming to church, all kinds of people from all echelons of society who believed in our mission. And the mission is still an amazing, amazing mission.
Yep. And in Australia, that tradition continued with Goran Saunders, who stood on the back of a truck.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it? So, and I often think about that. You know, if you went to plant a church today, you'd think, oh my goodness, how are we going to get people to come, whatever. But they just turned up in places and God worked and people came and it was quite stunning.
Mm. So how do you think that beginning has shaped us as an organisation today in terms of what we or if you like, the soul or the essence of what the Salvos is. For example, someone would say Salvos are Christianity with the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah. I think whenever we move away from that, we're on dangerous ground, because I think that's why God raised us up. And I like some of the sayings, like we're a bird with two wings. So on one side, we have the social, on the other side, we have the church. And when we get that out of whack, the bird doesn't fly well. Or it might be Gowans with his three parts of the stool, which was saving souls, growing saints, serving suffering humanity. So all three have to be part of who we are for the chair to remain stable. So I think we can never lose that, because it seems that that's our unique position in the place of the church and the way that God has gifted us and the hearts he's given to us. So we'll never be purely a church. We'll never be a social institution. And if we are, we get the bird out of whack. It doesn't fly well.
Mm. So would you say we have a unique place in the body of Christ? And could you put some words around that as to who we are as opposed to the Anglicans or the Baptists or the Pentecostals? What's our specific bit in the body of Christ, would you say?
Yeah, look, I think we're using lots of our little sayings that have captured people along the way, but we're the people with the heart to God and the hand to man. And I think that's who we're meant to be. And what I love is sometimes God will gather the rich to help us to serve the poor.
And it's
not all about us having everyone in the Salvation Army. So we need people from all parts of society. We need every church. But our unique place that we stand is our hearts are towards God, our hands are toward man, and we'll do everything that we can to see that that's the heart of our mission.
Mm. One of the challenges that I think makes it difficult in that sense is the professionalisation of social work, that when there's a complex problem in the world, we have to have qualifications and we have to have a strategy, and it's not as simple as getting on the back of a cart and saying, do you want to come home to my place for dinner? Because we probably have to fill in some forms if we wanted to do that. Mm. There's this sense of threat to that I'm wondering if you could talk about.
Yeah, look, I think we'll always have professional social workers, because that's where the world is going. Mm. And if we do it without the love of Jesus, then perhaps that's not our space. So I know that that's a contentious thing to say, but I still think every Salvo should be on mission. And just recently I was challenged about this, because I thought, you know, if one day the government said, if you have to do this, this, this and this to be part of social work, there might be a day when we say, actually no, because that's not who we are. But I reckon all of us have the opportunity to be engaged in the work that serves people. So, for example, I find it stunning at the moment that other countries continue to appoint people who are responsible for the lonely, a minister for loneliness. What an indictment that is on our society. I think of the bus crash even this week. Amazing if we could be at the cricket club at Warrandyte, or we could be standing alongside people in the Hunter Valley, because when a crisis hits, surely that's our space. Heart to God, hand to man. Recovery churches, I think they should spring up all across the nation, because people come out of recovery, they've got nowhere to go where they find real community. Where are the people of God? That's who we are. That's our space. When people come out of jail, who's there to greet them and say, you know what? What do you need so that you can go forward and not end up back in there? I think there's 100 opportunities to what I would say is the booth kind of social work, which is all about others. Where am I standing beside someone who needs someone right now? I think that's what he was talking about. And then on another level, how do we stand for the big issues of society, whether that's giving all of our Indigenous folk a voice, or whether that's saying we don't agree with this and being bold enough to say it, and not necessarily worrying about money or fundraising, but just saying the heart and soul of our movement is that we will see people transformed one life at a time with the love of Jesus. It's got to be both. It is demonstration and proclamation. That's the heart of the Salvos.
Mm. And when I talk to the professionals who are running some of our institutions, they would love nothing more than for teams of volunteers to come alongside and just do simple things that are not complicated therapy or anything like that. It's just getting alongside, let's go to the beach, or, you know, it's that sort of thing. And so there's opportunities there.
Yeah.
I wonder though if the Salvos, like your Joe Average Salvo, has almost disengaged from the social work side of things because they think it's not their job anymore.
Yeah, and I think, you know, how we talked earlier about the Methodists and this rise and lift, I think that's happened in the Salvos as well. When Booth recruited people, he put on a Guernsey and set them to work. And I think if we really believed in the priesthood of all believers or the mission of all believers, this is what the Methodists did well. They'd sign you up, they'd start you on a discipleship path, and then they'd give you a social justice issue to address. So today, where's our sign up? Where's our saying, now I want you to go, here's your giftedness, go out and here's your ministry, because it is the mission of all believers. We're not a sitting Salvation Army, we're a sent Salvation Army. So how do we get back to that?
One of the areas you've talked about is the disaster type stuff, like the classic Salvo imagery is when the Westgate Bridge collapsed or when Cyclone Tracy hit you know, the drop-in spaces in World War II with the Donut Girls and things like that. There's this essence of who we are which says, let's get involved in the most tragic thing and just do what's practical to be done. And we have that opportunity with our food trucks and things like that too, don't we?
We do.
And opportunities for your typical Salvo to sign up for those sort of things and throw on a vest and be involved.
That's right. And I think people never forget kindness, do they? So, and we've got to watch this a bit, because I think the older folk in Australia remember us because of the wars. People now remember us because of disasters. Where are we showing kindness so that people know that the Salvos are always there, no matter what happens, no matter what hits? And I think for me, kindness counts, and that's never forgotten. So it can be the simplest act, can't it? But if every Salvo was out there and on mission, imagine the difference that that would make.
Yeah. One of the challenges to the soul of an organisation, you know, and soul is quite a mystical, spiritual sort of word, isn't it? It's where has the spirit prompted us to be, is, I guess, the shift in society where we're a thinking, postmodern, subjective kind of world where we don't sort of listen to the prompts like that anymore. We're fearful, or we have to think it through. We have to have a three-step plan. And I think our best soulfulness happens when we're listening to the spirit, and you know, the spirit prompts us to do something wild and wacky. We go, okay, I'll do that, and we don't hesitate, you know.
Yeah, I love that, because they're my sort of people. And I think, you know, having served in Papua New Guinea, you listen to the spirit of God, because there's no other way. And I don't think people are disconnected from spirituality. So if I go into the centre of Melbourne yesterday, there's a Body, Mind and Spirit Festival. There's big signs up at the moment, welcome to hell because of the solstice. And I think, really? So what are Christians saying? What are they speaking about? What are they doing? Is our God real? I think we've been known a little more for what we're against rather than what we're for, because we should be about people finding freedom. And if we are, who'll be standing there to show people how to find that freedom in life? Because surely that's the message of the gospel in body, mind and soul. So we find that there's plenty of people delving into spirituality. But what does our God offer, and do we really believe that? You know, I've been in a developing nation and seen great faith. I've seen God come through in our own country, but what do we really believe for? Because if evil is rampant and doing stuff, what is our God doing? So I think it's a great challenge to this thinking group of people in the West now, who are very reliant on science and what is possible, rather than here is God, and what might appear impossible is still possible. So our rational minds don't like to go there too often, but I love that. And I think my greatest heroes are the people who believe that.
Yeah. One of the things that makes sense to me, like spirituality can be a little weird. Like, you know, you sit in a prayer meeting and you know, you have a burning sensation in your tummy or something like that. Or spirituality where you're sitting around a fire or you're in some sort of environment that's just sort of weird and almost other. But there's something incredibly spiritual about sacrificial love. Like probably for me, that's what lands. You know me well. I'm a Pentecostal as a brick, really. But when people love me and when I have an opportunity to love people well to the point where they scratch their head and go, why are you doing this? This is more than is required. Yep. And obviously you're putting yourself out enormously to contribute in this way. There's something of the spirit in that as well, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And I think it can be so many different things, because people connect in all sorts of ways, don't they? Pentecostal people love to raise their hands and worship God and really connect with him. Others will connect around a fire or, you know, just being in a quiet space, and all are equally valid, aren't they? But I think what you nailed there is the extra, why would? And I think, you know, sometimes the Spirit said to me, go out on a limb and tell that person you're praying. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to look like a turkey if God doesn't come through. But when he says it, he does come through. And I think, you know, where have we lost that listening to the promptings of the Spirit? Because I think they're really important as well. So I think there's 100 different ways, but if we are listening to the way we connect and the way that others connect, then all things are possible, aren't they? But that extra, why would someone stick with me? Why would someone bother to pray with me? Why would someone bother to spend time with me? I think they're all key, aren't they, in a world where community has been lost.
Yeah. One of the things that's been soulful in the Salvation Army has been music. Like I look back on my childhood and festivals at the Albert Hall where we're singing Boundless Salvation and there's 100 people marching around with a flag and there's a brass band going nuts and everybody's singing. You feel like you're part of something powerful and incredible, and I guess something of the Pentecostal experience is like that too, when you've got, you know, it's people really singing together in unison. There's this sense of fellowship, or, well, army is the wrong word, but there's something about an army, isn't it, that we're not alone. We're part of something bigger than ourselves, and we can actually have a crack at things that seem ridiculous because the Spirit is prompting us in a communal way to have a go at things.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, like, I probably connect with music in all sorts of different ways because I like different styles of music, but there's nothing better for me than being in a big crowd and singing. And, you know, I'm not very good at liturgy, but I remember going to a very liturgical service and thinking, oh my goodness, it's like I'm in heaven. It was quite stunning. Then I think, you know, why are more people signing up for pub choirs, and why are young people all learning some kind of instrument? Because they want to be a part of something that's bigger than them, don't they? So what is it in our world today that gives that reality of something bigger than me that makes a difference? And why don't we just infiltrate rather than creating everything that we think is part of church?
One element of pub choir that I think is the magic is that it's everybody contributes. It's not a performance by one or two people, which can be the way a brass band is. Here, look at this incredible band. They're amazing. They're going to bless you. Or look at these 10 people on the stage doing worship. What excellence you can see there. Aren't they beautiful? Aren't they clever? And we're passively receiving that. So pub choir is completely different, isn't it? It's complete engagement. And I think that's part of the soul of the Salvation Army, isn't it?
Yeah, and I used to watch out of the window at Redfern, and I'd see this group of people who were over standing on Redfern Oval with guitars and all sorts of things and just having a go, and I thought, that's their community. That's what they love. We're all part of something, and that's exciting. Although I must say, Bryce, when you play the ukulele, that moves me.
Often there are people weeping when I play the ukulele, but I'm not quite sure whether that's spirit-led or not. Yeah. I think there are threats, though, to the soul of an organisation. We can get distracted and we can be, if you like, just sold out to, I guess, materialism, I want to say, and expediency, and especially in liminal spaces. Susan Beaumont from the book would suggest that we tend to panic and we can miss the soul of the organisation and go for something that's not quite right because we can't just sit doing nothing waiting for something to happen, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I think there's a lot of things here. I think materialism's a biggie. I think entitlement, I think losing our prophets and evangelists and people who don't understand the days are different. We're postmodern, post-Christian, post-COVID, not keeping the bird with two wings. I think this soul of the organisation is so key, and that can get threatened so easily, that things that take over from it. So how do we remain pure to who we are?
We're certainly on the right track with our vision statement. It's an absolute beautiful thing. As I talk to you and Colonel Winsome Merritt too, there's just this always coming back to the heart of who we are, which is very similar to the soul of who we are. This, wherever there's hardship or injustice, Salvos, we live, love and fight alongside others to transform Australia one life at a time with the love of Jesus. This this essence of it being about the individual seems to be one of the huge themes of that statement.
Yes. That's right. We're clever people in Australia, aren't we? We can do so much. We could go full on professional social workers, but it's not who we are. So my deal is, what do we want to be known for? Because you see, someone like World Vision, they have never swayed from their vision statement. It is very much about Christ and it's very much about kids in developing nation. The Salvation Army, we know we're very much about people and we're very much about Christ. So how do we keep that on the right track so that we are known as people who see people's lives absolutely transformed? That's what brings just excitement to my heart when I hear a full story that, yeah, we help someone body, we help someone mind, but we also help someone's soul. So you get the full package. They've really found freedom because they've found Jesus in that space as well. Because anyone can do great social work. Well, not anyone, but, you know, best practice. So why are we there? I think we bring the plus, and the plus is Jesus. So how do we make sure that in everything we do, we always allow the love of Jesus part?
Well, I don't think it takes too long to be in proper relationship with people, even in rich, seemingly comfortable Australia, to find the pain points, to find the places where people are suffering, the marriages that are struggling, the kids. One thing that's really striking me is so many adults that I'm friends with at the moment are worried about their kids, worried about their teenage kids who just have seemed like they're anchorless. They've had a pandemic. They've got technology hitting them like I never had when I was a kid. All sorts of issues that create anxiety and mental problems. And I don't know what to do. And it's a real pain point for them. And I found myself talking to a parent the other day saying, you know, for me, there was this anchor in my life as a teenager that said I was loved and valued, not by what my mum and dad thought or what the kid down the road thought, but because I knew who I was in Christ, you know, something about that grace stability.
I think I was being baited one day about a very wealthy businessman who said to me, well, you know, Miriam, I'm happy to support the Salvos, happy to, you know, find money to help the poor, but tell me why the Salvos would need to be in my suburb. And I sort of put it back to him a bit. I said, yeah, nice suburb, nice houses. And I said, I bet there's mortgage stress. I bet your kids have some issues. I bet you fear youth suicide, the pressure on them about the kind of marks that they've got to get. I said, I bet there's issues with marriage and relational stuff. He said, absolutely. And that's why you need to be there too. So he said, it might be in a different form, but how will you be there for us? So I think you're right, absolutely. It's not just one group of society. The poor can be the rich, can't they? But poor in relationship or poor in having time for each other. So how do we ensure that wherever we are, it's about looking after people and with the love of Jesus?
I do think in society where a lot of physical needs are met, it takes a lot longer for people to trust you with their pain.
Yes.
A person who's in addiction at the end of their rope comes to our centre and obviously they've got pain. They've got their hand out to get some support. But, you know, a person who's holding down a job and on the surface looks well, it's going to take a year or 2 years or something to build the sort of relationship where they'll trust you with their pain because they're a little bit proud, a little bit sort of, well, I don't need the Salvation Army, you know. It's almost like the soul of the Salvation Army is for the very poor. But maybe that's one of the things that we're tweaking is that the Salvation Army is for people anywhere, like who's got an issue with anything. We're just going to love you and that's help you find peace and joy and stability wherever you're at.
And I think that might be our plus into the future, that when we're going to AI and all sorts of interesting things, take a number. I was trying to get the Medicare card for my dad fixed up the other day. Oh my goodness, because he's not on the computer. He's as deaf as when it comes to phone calls and the person saying, I can't talk to you, I'll talk to him. I said, fine, you talk to him. He's going, I can't hear a word you're saying. And the person says, okay, I'll talk to you. So I'm thinking, if that's my dad who hasn't got me to help him, how are others even doing it? And I think sometimes we have to say we're the person. We're the person. We're not the AI technology. We're not the take a number. We're the person who is there for you. So how might the Salvation Army become more and more like that? Whether you're rich or poor, whether you're struggling or not, we're going to be the person who's in your space. And I think that's a total reshift. But who are we in the days ahead? And I would hope that we could become that. And I agree with you. It takes a lot longer to build relationships because we got it all together, haven't we? And it takes a while to get that front down to say, actually, we haven't. And I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and I reckon it's taken at least 4 years to build that relationship. Finally, I got the story. What a sad, sad story. No one would know.
I was running with a guy the other day who ran his first marathon. And it just broke him. Like you can't hide in a marathon. You're at the end of your rope. No one can run it for you. You've got to do it yourself. And he was running the day after at a training thing I'm at. And I'm slow as a wet week. And so was he because he was sore. But he just wanted to download. I couldn't believe how broken I felt and how lost I felt. And he was saying things like, and I know you're a Christian and, you know, you've got that sort of stuff in your forefront of your mind and you think about these things. So he was absolutely pushing into me to say, yeah. I know you get these spaces where life isn't simple and where I discovered there's more pain or fear than I thought there was because mm-hmm. I've done this big event.
Yes.
It leads me to the question of salvos feeling like they're a little lost in terms of discovering the soul. And I think it gets down to that we get busy doing things that aren't the soul of the organisation. And we kind of get in a rut with that. Mm. And we need some ways of, I guess, breaking out of that mould to get back to the soul so that we can feel fully salvo, fully Christian, fully on mission for God.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if every salvo could say, you know what, I'm going to do one worship thing a week, however that looks for me. Mm. I'm going to get into the Word and keep growing as a Christian, and I'm going to do one ministry, whether that means I ask someone in social how I could get beside someone, or it might mean I'm going to ring up someone who I know is lonely, or actually I'm going to go and get to know all of my neighbours. Didn't we do some of this really, really well during COVID and how quickly we forgot? But I think that brought us back to the essence of who we are. We're the person who stands beside someone and actually really loves them and does life with them. And then we can either, you know, find the right support that they need, but all along the space be praying for them and believing, like you said in the marathon, there'll come a time to talk about things that really matter and imagine what God can do with that. So I think it's the simple stuff, isn't it? We've made it all a little bit complex and you have to do this and be there and look like this. And God's saying, hey, just get beside someone, share the journey with them. You watch what I do.
Yeah. Every salvo doing that, being relational, being connected, working on their own stuff, isn't it? I think that's a big deal too. The soul of the organisation is that we have a bit of depth, we have a bit of wisdom, we've thought about our relationship with God and our relationship with the world. So when someone talks to us, they go, oh, wow, and are curious and attracted by that rather than saying, well, here's someone who's still got a 12-year-old faith that's very rigid and, you know, that sort of work is also the soul of the Salvation Army. We are people that have incredible depth and compassion.
And imagine the authenticity and the vulnerability of that early army when someone probably said, you know, I was a drunk, got saved at the drum, and now we say, oh, no, I've all got it all together, but you haven't, let me help you. It's much more authentic to say, you know what, I haven't got it all together either, so let's do the journey together. So let's just be real.
Yeah. Mm. So there's something attractive about the humility of that.
Yes. Yeah, and absolutely.
I think that is part of the salvos, isn't it? All the salvo heroes I think of are very unaffronting, aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't think they're anything special. They're just, normal people doing whatever anybody else would do the way they see themselves. But actually, they're exceptional in the way.
And that was the wonderful thing, wasn't it? This ragtag army changed the world. So let's go for a bit of a ragtag army again that can change the world because we actually do love people and are there for them and side by side with them. How good would that be?
Yep. I think Jesus did that too, didn't he?
I think he might have, yeah.
They weren't spectacular.
No,
The only spectacular one was Judas, and he turned out to be a bit of a ratbag.
A bit of a ratbag, yep, let's do that.
Terrific. Great to chat with you, Miriam. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Bryce. Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this leadership series. If you would like to explore these themes and conversations more, please feel free to contact us at faithcommunities@salvationarmy.org.au. Bless you.